Good morning and welcome to Investment Talk, a one-hour live radio program brought to you by the financial advisors of Legacy Wealth Management of Fargo and Bismarck and featuring the president and financial advisor of Legacy, Paul Myers, and financial advisor and CFP, Brady Brunsvold, with host Steve Poitras. Securities and investment advice from LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, and member FINRA and SIPC. Nothing in today's show is an offer to buy or sell securities, and you should consult with an investment advisor in person before taking any action, as every investment involves risk. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. And now, the award-winning team at Legacy Wealth Management presents Investment Talk.
What do you think of that song?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
That's right.
Good morning out there. We are on standard time. Standard time.
So are we?
We had been. That's what happens. We thought we're putting an end to it, but evidently we're going to continue for the foreseeable future. Anyway, this is Investment Talk. I'm Steve Poitras with Brian Bruce.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Brian. Our producer, Josh Linus. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, guys.
Evidently, our friend Brady Brunsvold is out looking for the 30-point buck.
I think he's looking for the 30-point buck, or as I like to call it, he's looking for Big Hank.
Big Hank.
Big Hank.
Henry the Deer?
Yes.
And searching for Henry the Big Deer down in Arizona. Good morning, Paul Myers.
Hey, Steve and Brian and Josh. Good to be with you guys this morning. It's another beautiful day in North Dakota, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's raw out here, Paul. It is it's in the upper 30s, and it's windy, and the temperature is expected to do either hold or go down today. So it's pretty chilly for, what is this, the first Sunday in November?
This would be the
sixth. Steve, you're gonna have to put up your top on your convertible pretty soon.
Yes, yes. Well, hey, in this crowd, we know who's got the convertible and who doesn't.
Right, not this guy.
All right. Hey, it is a good morning, though, and it's nice to be able to join you guys through the magic of whatever. And I know you guys have a lot to talk about today. Gosh, we've got lots of things that have been going on. We're in the middle of a huge football season, and it's going to be another big game today.
We certainly are, Paul. The Vikings are 6-1, leading the Central Division.
Who would have thought that?
I would not have guessed that. And they play the Washington Commanders?
Yep. I can understand the hesitation because...
Well, I forgot the name.
The Commanders.
The Commanders, right. And that's a very winnable game for these guys, but... As I say, we'll see, because we've been down this road before on very good Viking football teams that start the season hot.
They lost, of course. Carson Wentz broke a finger in his hand, but this backup has won two in a row for Washington, and
they've been
underdogs, so it'll be interesting to see how that comes out.
Mm-hmm. You know, Steve, somebody said that they... You know, when the unfortunate day comes when they pass away, they want to pick the Minnesota Vikings to be pallbearers so that they can let him down one final time.
I'm laughing inside, Paul.
I know.
That was a mercy.
I don't get no respect. I feel like Rodney Dangerfield, you know?
Well, the Bison had no problem yesterday,
right,
scoring right away and throughout, and they got a chance to play a lot of number two and threes. Boy, you know, it must be really tough to support the football program down at Western Illinois, where they are now, 0-9 on the season. And if you were watching on TV and you caught glimpses of the almost totally empty stands, of course, it was windy and not so...
Right. Rugged deal. The NDSU that scored early and often, as you said.
Did they have something over 400 rushing yards? Yeah, they didn't have much problem there. The Cobbers of Concordia really walloped Hamlin. I don't know, with the tune there, something like 50-0 or 59-0. And the Dragons of Morehead State hung on to edge Concordia St. Paul by a point.
Mm-hmm. UND won.
Yeah, they won big. Yep. They were the next to the worst team in the
Indiana
Sycamores.
Mm-hmm. And then our neighbors to the south, SDSU, survived a scare.
Too bad. I would have loved to see Northern Iowa knock them off.
Really would have changed the mix up in the division.
What's up next here, Mr. Bruce?
Well, we've got a lot to talk about on this morning's show. We're going to get a big event coming up on Tuesday, as everybody probably knows, with our midterm elections. There's lots of issues on the ballot, both locally and nationally. We're going to have a few comments about that. We're also going to talk about a diesel fuel shortage out there. And we're going to get some facts established alongside some of the news headlines that have been talking about the diesel fuel shortage. And then, of course, we're going to have our legacy question of the week, Steve. We wouldn't forget about that.
I've got one.
Good. And then, of course, we'll come out of our news at the top of the hour, followed by our 5 points in 5 minutes.
I've got that.
Okay, good. Let's use yours instead of mine. How about that, Steve?
Well, we can save some for later, I guess.
And then we'll be talking about interest rates and what's been going on with that and what the Fed is trying to do. And, Paul, I'm really looking forward to having a discussion about that before we wrap up the program with the Stock Market Week in Review. Were you going to add something, Paul?
Well, I was going to say, hopefully when we get to that section about the midterms, we can, you know, endorse publicly certain candidates and talk smack about those we don't like. Or maybe we can't really do that, can we, guys?
I don't think we have enough phone lines open for commentary
probably,
like that.
Probably better off leaving that alone. Yes.
Is Steve laughing silently again? I just need to know.
No, I'm my brow is furrowed with concern.
Seriously, guys, you know, it is kind of amazing when Brian and Brady and I and the rest of the crew get together at Legacy during the week. Of course, a lot of the time we're talking to clients and other people like that. But, you know, the talk this week has been about what's been going on in the market. I think when the Federal Reserve came out and Jerome Powell basically did everything he could to kill just about everything. And then on Friday, as I remember, the market bounced back up and had a pretty good day.
The Friday was a good day, but it wasn't enough to offset the rest of the week. So you still had for the week. The Dow was down about 1.5%. The S&P 500 was down about 3.5%. And ouch, the NASDAQ, of course, because of the way big tech continued to beat up, the NASDAQ was off 5.7% for the week. And all of those big tech stocks, every last one of them that we follow, were down
significantly.
So we'll be talking more about that.
We will
later.
Be talking more about that.
So,
well, and I want to clarify that too, Steve. I know what you meant. It's quite often every last tech stock that we often talk about on here. There were some bright spots out there in the world, and. You know, there are some companies that kind of amaze everyone because they keep having a lot of resiliency in spite of other parts of the market going down. And I can't wait to hear what Brian's going to tell us about how the markets react after the midterms. That'll be interesting to talk about when we get to that point. So I'll leave it in your hands, guys, and I'll just sit back here and make wise remarks and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about the midterm elections. Like I said, there's lots of key issues on the ballot, both locally and nationally. We're not going to make any politically divisive statements, Paul, but we're just going to be watching how things unfold and look at the results as they impact the markets. And how the results come in will certainly have some influence on the movement of the indexes in certain sectors, industry, and individual stocks. Here's an interesting fact, Steve.
Okay, I'm all ears.
The correlation between the stock market performance and midterm elections is well documented. In 17 of the last 19 midterms since 1946, the market performed better in the 6 months following an election than it did in the 6 months leading up to it, according to research by Charles Schwab and Bloomberg.
This time around, the bar is rather low because it had the last 6 months. It was not performing very well at all.
It is.
Well,
but,
you know, along those lines, the other statistic that I thought was particularly interesting, and this comes to us from Dr. Quincy Crosby, who's head of research at LPL Financial. Quincy pointed out that you have to go all the way back to 1942 to find a time when the stock market was not significantly higher in the 12-month period following the midterm elections. And, of course, you know, past performance, it doesn't really guarantee anything at all. But you don't ignore that kind of stuff. And a lot of people say that the market doesn't like uncertainty. And, of course, that's what we have before an election is uncertainty. And we might add the certainty after the election can be just as rugged sometimes. But, you know, at least we'll get rid of all those ads on television, guys. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the TV and radio have been overrun with political ads.
But they're always so tasteful.
I just
salute them because they're always fighting for us.
Steve, they play the same ones over and over and over again. You notice that?
Well, I guess so.
So do we.
See, it's a wonderful.
But people like our ads, Paul. Let's
okay.
That's a huge difference there. But
well, whether it, all broadcast media, they love the political seasons because, of course, they sell so much airtime for various, whether it's candidates or issues, and there it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you made a note here, Brian, about a possible diesel fuel shortage. Is this real or is this imagined?
That's right. I've been talking to a couple people on the phone on Friday, clients of ours, as we often do, and one of them said to me, "Is it true that the United States has a 25-day supply of diesel fuel and then we're going to run out?" And I said, "Well, I don't really believe that. It depends on where you heard it from." And he said, "Well, I heard it on the news and, you know, a couple reports over the radio." And I said, "Well, I don't really believe that, so let me do some further digging into that, and let's find some factual content around that, story." And as it turns out, there is a 25-day supply, according to several news outlets, and that's also by the experts who watch the inventory levels. But there's no cause for a panic, and the U.S. is not going to run out of it, according to energy market experts. Diesel fuels is in short supply, and there are high prices. There's no question about it. Prices have been over $5 a gallon for quite some time, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And inventories are down to below their five-year averages, which is actually typically about 35 to 40 days of fuel supply on average, and now we're down to 25. So it's really not that drastic compared to where we are historically,
as with a lot of products, it's moving through. You know, it gets used and it continues the flow, the supply chain.
Right.
So it's down some days, but still not nowhere near any desperation level.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. So having a 25-day supply of diesel fuel and then we run out assumes that the entire supply chain comes to a screeching halt, and we know that that's not true. There's still more being drilled. There's more being produced. There's more being shipped. There's more being refined. So there's a steady inflow of diesel fuel throughout the entire supply chain. So it's comparable to a grocery store's supply of milk at any given time. Your local grocery store could have an inventory of 3 days of milk, and then they'll run out. But that's only 3 days worth at any given point. But if cows keep milking and the farmers keep sending milk, the dairy keeps delivering. And that was the point of the true facts behind the supply of diesel fuel.
There's a curious thing related to diesel fuel. I think most of us remember when diesel fuel cost less than regular gas. But for some time now, it's been reversed. And now, like you say, you see marquees on service stations where the price of a gallon of diesel fuel is in some cases, like it's a dollar and a half higher.
It's about a dollar and a half higher.
It's simpler to refine diesel fuel than gas. So
it's a simpler formula.
Strange.
To refine from the raw material of oil, but there's other factors at play. And
of course, when we think about so much product in this country moves by truck, and those are nearly all diesel fuel. So that's a strain on the supply.
That's going to be a strain on the supply chain, and also going to see that reflected in prices at your stores and retailers and so forth. So anyway, I just wanted to make a comment about that this morning because it was on the minds of people.
Yeah, Brian and Steve, I did some research on that, too, and some thinking about it. And, you know, it's kind of funny because we get in times like this, and people are always looking for someone to blame for this particular situation. And I guess I can jump right into the middle of that fray, too. There is a shortage of diesel oil, and it all boils down to one thing. The oil companies make more money shipping their diesel oil to other parts of the world than they do selling it in the United States. So the big oil companies decide, well, why send it here to the United States? Let's send it somewhere else. And so it's not really a policy decision or anything like that. The oil companies, and I don't know, Steve, how have those oil companies been doing as far as profits lately?
Well, record profits for every last one of them, far as I can see. Incredibly big profits. Yes.
So anyway, I get a little I get a little crazed because people are always trying to point the finger at something. And I suppose I'm doing that too when I say it's the oil companies. But the oil companies make a decision, as they do every year, as every company does. Well, where am I going to sell this? They sell it to the highest bidder. It's a bit of the old American greed out there. And, you know, I'm not trying to soothe over it. It's going to be a problem if they don't continue to make more diesel oil available here in the United States. But there is so much profit-taking these days. You know, it used to be that people were happy making 10% on something, and now it seems like they want to make 150%, and that's kind of a shame.
All right. Well, let's change gears here a little bit and do one of our regular features, which just might involve you, the listener, to give us a call.
It's now time for the Legacy Wealth Management Question of the Week.
Okay, I invite you to take a shot at the answer to this question by calling 237-5948 or 701-237-5948 or on your cell phone, #5346. Okay, we got a big election day coming up here in just a couple of days, this Tuesday. And this year's election ballot in North Dakota includes a vote on whether or not to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. 37 states and the District of Columbia have laws permitting marijuana for medical use. But our question this morning is, how many states have already legalized recreational marijuana use for adults? So we're looking for that number. 237-5948, 701-237-5948. If you're not sure, just take a stab at it. How many states have legalized recreational marijuana use for adults? And I believe this question is not only on the ballot in North Dakota. I think there's at least a few other states where they're voting on it as well. But take a stab at that. How many states have already legalized recreational marijuana use for adults? I guess the first states to do it were maybe about 10 years ago.
Yeah, Colorado comes to mind.
Yes, we got a phone line ringing here. The first were Colorado and Washington.
Yep.
Quite a number of others have followed, so we'll be looking to see if someone can come up with that number. And we have got Doug C. down in Breckenridge. Good Sunday morning to you, Doug.
I'm guessing somewhere between 1 and 50. How about 12?
Well, 12 is a fair guess, but it's somewhat more than that, Doug. I think we got somebody else calling. We'll go to that. But what are you up to this morning, Doug? Doug, we've talked to you recently, haven't we?
Yeah, I'm out looking for deer, just driving around.
Okay. Yep. Well, good luck with that, and thanks for calling
you.
In. All right.
Have
thanks
a good
for
day.
Listening. You bet. Doug C. From Breckenridge, and we have got, looks like we've got Dean S., says on the road again. Hi, Dean.
Hello.
Are you out there looking for deer too?
Yeah, so we don't hit them.
Well, yeah, you bring that up. That is one of the leading causes of having to take a vehicle to the body shop is because of the crash with the deer. It's really far too common. So. It's Gene S., not Dean S. How are you doing, Gene?
No, it's Dean.
It is D. It is. Wait, did you get that? Okay, Dean, all right. Dean, anyway, how many states do you think have legalized recreational marijuana use for adults?
16, and North Dakota is up for the vote next week.
It is a, well, since the other phone line, you're pretty close here. It's actually, well, wait a minute. You're close. We got another phone line ringing here. So you're just in the ballpark, Dean, but not exactly there. So since we got another caller, we'll give them a chance. Thanks for calling in this morning, all right?
Goodbye.
All right. And we've got Bonnie L. in Fargo. Hello, Bonnie.
Hi there.
Hi. What do you? How many states?
21.
Well, you're even a little closer. We've got it bracketed. We had Dean saying 16 and Bonnie saying 21. You're close enough. It's 19 states, which everybody, of course, is vital information here. 19 states have legalized recreational marijuana use for adults. Well, how do you think that vote's going to go in North Dakota, Bonnie?
I am not sure. I feel like it's going to be really close, but I kind of think it's not going to pass.
All right. Fair enough. It's, you're probably right that it's going to be close. Okay. Thanks, Bonnie. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Yep. And okay, she was close enough. So the answer was 19 states. Okay. And already in terms of medical marijuana, it's 37 states. You would think that it would get okayed in that. In
you would think so.
Medical use. Yeah.
It's had kind of a tough road to...
How do you think it's going to fare in North Dakota, Paul?
You know, I think she's probably right. It's probably going to be very close. One of the realities is that the state put out a fiscal note on the medical marijuana, or on the use of marijuana, saying that if it passes, it's going to cost the state more than it will take in tax revenue. And the people behind that particular questions say that, you know, that's totally not true. It's for every other state, it's been a tax revenue boon, but that's probably not the, you know, the real question that people struggle over, but it is kind of interesting. A while ago in North Dakota, they pushed an amendment through that allowed this medical marijuana, but then I think the state legislature kind of regulated it pretty heavily, Steve. I don't know if you're aware of the way that works.
Well, I'm really not, no.
Yeah, the state legislature can basically, will be, and with this one, will refine it to what they feel it should be.
Well, I know down in South Dakota, the people voted to okay it, but then the legislature there did everything they could to stop the legalization.
So they're up to vote for it again.
Yeah, so what are you going to do?
We got a couple of minutes here. Yes.
Yes, we do.
Well, it was interesting that we got a number of people to weigh in on the question. I think it demonstrates the fact that there are a lot of people who do follow this. The other question that's on the ballot in North Dakota refers to the term limit concept. And, of course, in North Dakota, some of our positions do have term limits, I believe. But the fact is that... you can serve in that legislature for a long time. And there are a lot of people out there who believe that term limits are at the root, or the lack of term limits are at the root of, is at the root of some of the legislative problems that we have in this country.
Yeah, well, I sort of have a feeling that there's enough people riled up. I think we might pass that ballot item on term limits.
The term limits has a good chance of getting passed. I'm not saying that it will, but there's a lot of people who feel, like you said, Paul, a lot of people who feel like there should be term limits in place, and that would solve a lot of the legislative type of problems, especially with delaying things and obstructing things and so forth. So.
I like, if you go back and study the very first Constitution for this country, the Articles of Confederation, they had really stiff, I think you could... only serve like 1 year in some of these positions, or anyway, they that was changed. So, I guess
it'll be interesting.
Okay, yep. We're just seconds away from the top of the hour news, and we'll be back with some of our other features and discussion as we'll continue Investment Talk. Brought to you by the advisors at Legacy Wealth Management, who can be reached at 701-365-8083. Good morning. Welcome to the second half of Investment Talk, brought to you by the advisors at Legacy Wealth Management. Coming to you every Sunday morning over 550 KFYR in Bismarck, 790 KFGO, and 104.7 KFGO in Fargo. I'm Steve Poitras with Brian Bruce. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Producer Josh Linus.
Good morning.
And Paul Myers. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, Steve and Brian and Josh. So good to be with you guys every Sunday morning.
And we're giving Brady a pass today. He's out in search of, he's looking for a deer named Hank.
He's looking for Big Hank this morning. Brady, if you're out there, we wish you well, my friend. We want to hear all about it when you get back.
All right.
And maybe there will be a deer involved or something
and
like that.
And we are, of course, everybody got an extra hour, or at least the potential for an extra hour of sleep, because we set the clocks back. The standard time.
We were supposed to, right? I was here at 7 o'clock this morning. I couldn't figure it out, but then...
it's lonely out there. Say, speaking of Legacy Wealth Management, you guys had what you could only term as pretty successful seminars here of late.
Yeah, we did. Paul, I'm sure you want to comment on that as well, but we just completed two seminars. We had one in Bismarck, one in Fargo, and, we got a chance to meet some terrific people, and they were very successful. There's a lot on people's minds these days with everything going on in the economy and the rest of the world, the elections and all of that. So, we had a lot of success doing that, and we're going to continue to do those as we roll into next year. We're already in the planning phase, and, we really enjoyed it.
See, speaking of your individual clients, Paul, with this change in interest rates, you're suddenly seeing the return on different, bonds. Climbing from virtually nil to 1, 2, 3, over 4% in some cases. Are you seeing increased questions, interest about bonds among your clients, Paul?
Well, we do see some increased interest, and we follow that too. The reality is that the bonds, which have some point in many places. I mean, there are places where you can get a pretty decent rate of return. The reality is that while the stock market is down this year, many of us believe that it will recover and recover with a vengeance and probably get back to its normal average of well over 10%. And in order to do that, it's going to have to go up, it's going to have to do 20% to return to that average of 10%. The bonds, while you might be able to get 3 or 4%, that may be all you'll be able to get is 3 or 4%. And so it doesn't take long when the market recovers to outdo what the bonds do. But the fact is, we've seen CDs that are paying 4% in places, and we have some of those available for people. And so the possibility of bonds, possibly maybe what some people need for their portfolio. I was going to say a word about clients and the seminars and things like that. It's so heartwarming, and I know Brian and Brady feel the same way, to go to a seminar and see quite a number of our current friends and clients who are able to show up and talk with us, and that's always pretty cool. And the number of new people who show up as well, because an awful lot of people have questions. And I got to tell you, as I'm traveling a little bit here on some business, I run into people on the airplane. When you take a flight out of Fargo and you head to Phoenix, you see a lot of people trust me. And many of them come from other towns around the region. And I had some feedback from people in Grand Forks and Devil's Lake, and even, believe it or not, Washburn, North Dakota, who said, hey, why don't you come out here and do, kind of a seminar sometime, because it'd be nice to have a chance to see you guys in person and talk individually about some of the things going on. So I suspect, Brian, that's going to be on the horizon for us, as we're going to be doing some more locations and some more interesting places.
Yeah, I highly suspect that as well. We are in the early planning phase of 2023, and we talked about wanting to get out to different places around, our viewing and listening area. And, the Bismarck, Washburn, Minot, Devil's Lake, Grand Forks, as you mentioned, as well as Western Minnesota and maybe even Northern South Dakota, we definitely have plans to do that. So we'll be announcing those dates and so forth as we complete the planning process for next year.
All right. I know it wouldn't be a complete Sunday morning Investment Talk show without our next feature, which is
Legacy Wealth Management presents 5 points in 5 minutes.
All right, should I lead off here, Brian?
Go ahead and lead off.
Okay, the Dow Index ended October up 14%, even though it was down a bit last Monday, the last trading day in the month of October. But the Dow, with that up 14% for the month, that was the best monthly gain for the Dow since January of 1976. We're talking more than 45 years ago.
Whoa.
Now, the S&P 500 was up 8% for October, and the NASDAQ was up 4% for the month. However, right away, for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the indexes were slipping downward in those first days, although they rebounded some on Friday to bring us up to the current status. Brian.
Yeah, that's a pretty historic month for October, if it was the best one in 45 years. Let's swing over to point number two. It's been tough for big tech all over. Remember Alibaba, the big Chinese tech company? Share price was $309 just over 2 years ago in late October of 2020. By October 13th of this year, it was down to $76. It closed on Friday at $69 a share. That's a pretty rugged deal, huh? From
309, it's beat up pretty bad. Okay, grain is still moving for now. We're talking about over in the Black Sea in those areas. Over the past 2 months, more than 400 ships departing Ukraine exported close to 10 metric tons of corn, wheat, sunflower products, barley, rapeseed, which is another name for canola, and soybean, soy oil, soy meal, soy products, under the Black Sea Grain Initiative. Now, there was one day where Putin was going to cancel all that because of, his suspect that the Ukrainians were hitting ships or whatever. But he turned it around very quickly on that. So
he turned it around, I think, in less than 48 hours. But in that brief time, the grain markets really spiked as a result of that news. And it caused some tense moment there. Okay, swing it over to point number four. 85% inflation in Turkey continued to rise in October. Consumer prices rose by 85.5% in October from a year earlier. It's the highest inflation in Turkey in 24 years, yet some experts maintain that inflation than the official figures. The Independent Inflation Research Group put the annual rate of inflation in Turkey at 185%. Wow.
Boy, think about that. Inflation in Turkey and right before Thanksgiving.
Oh, good one, Paul.
We weren't thinking about that, but...
All right.
Yeah, I have dad jokes because, those keep us going on a Sunday morning. We've got a lot of dads out there who, I'm sure there must be one or two of them who appreciate that humor somewhere.
I bet there is one or two dads out there.
All right. I looked and I found this one. I use a line here. I grow old, I grow old. I shall wear my trousers rolled. Now, that's a line out of a poem by T.S. Eliot. I think it's from the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock. But anyway, speaking of growing old, today there are more than 97,000 centenarians in the U.S. Centenarians, that's somebody 100 years of age and older. 97,000 in this country. That's about one in every 5,000 people in the U.S. is a centenarian. And here's about 85% of them are women. Worldwide, this article found that there's about 573,000 centenarians worldwide. United States has more than the other, but in terms of slice of the overall population, Japan, where whereas in the United States, I believe overall average lifespan now is like 78.
78, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
84. Mm-hmm. In Japan, I believe it's like 85.
Wow.
Yeah, expected life. So anyway... There's a lot of old folks, and we're all headed in the same direction at the same pace. Did you like that?
I did. I liked that very much. And, I'm not quite that old myself, but I think I have some cans of soup in my cupboard that are just about that old. They've been there for a long time. They keep looking up at me, and I'm saying, I don't think I want that soup today.
Is that beefaroni been in there for decades?
there's a great series of books out there called Freakonomics. They were kind of a big hit a number of years ago when they first came out. But they talk a great deal about the impact of the shifting demographics and what that's doing to our economy and to the supply. And when you think about it, it's very true. The aging of America and the aging of the world population makes a big difference in the way the demographics work and what people do and what they don't do. And we've seen it in media things, the number of people, for example, who read the newspaper and which people are those. You know, if you're trying to reach the aging population, what media do you use to communicate? And lots of impact on the economy and the stock market and things like that. I remember when a number of years ago there was a big story about Harley Davidson and about how the aging of America was impacting kind of a boom in people reaching the age of 50 and deciding that, doggone it, they're going to give in to their lifelong dream and own a Harley Davidson. And I think that trend may have passed a little bit. Most of us are looking at Vespas right now and thinking how hot those would be. But it is interesting to take a look at what happens with the aging of America and how that impacts a lot of the choices that are made for us, a lot of the television programming. And, of course, the media is always skewing towards that younger group, it seems like, as well. Steve and Brian, Brian's a little bit young for this, but Steve, I know, can appreciate this as well as many of our listeners. When you think about the musical choices out there and some of the music that survives. You know, we listen to Frank Sinatra. We listen to other performers from the 60s and 70s. I know Steve and I particularly like that group. And you think about that, that's 50 or 60 years ago. Right. And I wonder how many of these current performers, the Billie Eilishes of the world, will still be around 50 years from now. I don't think nearly as many of them.
Well, the audience, you know, it's a whole subject that it is so... well, divided in so many different ways.
It's fragmented.
People can select, they can have their own personal library of songs that they're listening to, and it just lessens the likelihood that there's going to be like the blockbuster hits that we had from way back when, or the American standards that live on, whether they're sung by Dean Martin or Doris Day or Frank Sinatra or Tony Bennett on down the line. Those songs live on, but the bias of my age when I grew up, but I just don't hear, you know, I mean, a song like a poem, it's got to be catchy.
You know, I think we could talk about music and demographic trends for a long time. I have to tell you that lately when I get up in the morning to kind of get the old motor started, I tell my Alexa device to play music by the Ramones. Steve, I'm sure you remember the Ramones well.
Right. Which was, there was a number of members of the Ramones, but that wasn't really the name, but that's the name of the group.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of funny. When they got started, they decided that they were going to all pick the same last name. So they all became known. At first, I thought, gee, these guys must be, what a group, but what a family they had. Well, no, they all picked that name. But there was, the guy who is the front man for U2?
Oh, Bono. I mean, that's what he
Bono.
Was. His real name is something else, but
Bono. Bono. Bono was on one of the late night shows the other night. Really a fascinating guy, and he has a brand new book out. And this doesn't have much to do with economics or the stock market, but pretty interesting fella. I really had not watched much of an interview for him, but you know, he's been a worldwide activist for an awful lot of. Real positive causes and just a neat guy. And he tells a story about how when he was like, 13 years old, he formed this band. And he said, we used to listen to the Ramones music and we loved it. And so one time some record producer asked us to come up with a tune and we played a Ramones song and said it was ours. And the guy said, yeah, I like that music. I think I'll hire you guys. So kind of interesting to look at some of these older rock and roll types and read about their history. And I realize that has very little to do with the stock market this morning.
No, I will just make the observation. Yep. Didn't Taylor Swift, we do even as old, and we recognize the name, the popularity of a Taylor Swift. She accomplished some kind of record here where in terms of the pop music charts, her album came out and the songs individually that she claimed the top, all top 10 spots, however they figure it, which was a first time for that to ever happen, I guess.
So yep.
She's pretty hot.
Yeah, Taylor Swift is quite a business lady and a tremendous performer, and it's fun to see these people do so well. And I think there's a big to-do going on because Taylor's coming to Minneapolis in June of 2023, and I know Brian and Steve and Josh, you and I will all be there for that event.
Oh, yeah, you know it.
Well, I would love to go.
Yeah.
I would love to go see her, but I'm not a big fan of these performers who want to appear in stadiums in front of, you know, 40,000 people. Yeah. That loses a bit of its humor for me.
Yeah. Well, and we've got some minutes here before we'll get on to our stock market week in review. But interest rates, you had some notes about interest rates, Brian, and I'd ask you and Paul, just what is it that Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve Board, what is it they're trying to do?
You know, I'll take this to start off with, Paul. What the Federal Reserve is trying to do is they're trying to slow down the economy because they have two mandates. And the first one is to, you know, reel in and rein in inflation and get it back down to their target level of 2%. And as we know, where things currently stand at 8%+, there's a lot of wood to chop on the inflation.
As the old saying goes. There was a lot of years there where it was 2% or even less. Yeah.
2% or less.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is to sort of moderate the employment is their other mandate, the employment picture. And both of the numbers are a little bit out of their comfort level. So what they're trying to do or what they're doing is they've been raising interest rates throughout this year. And let me give you a quick rundown of where we started and where we're at.
Okay.
So back in March, they started with 0.25%. In May, they started with, or they resumed with 0.5%. In June, July, September, they each raised, in each of those instances, 0.75%. And in December, they're predicted to raise another 0.5%. So if you add them all up, Steve, we're looking at 4.25% to 4.5% increase in the federal funds rate for 1 year, which is pretty historic, all with the attempt of trying to slow down the economy and get inflation under control.
And one measure where we see this reflected, a year plus ago, mortgage rates, you take out a 30-year mortgage on a home, you could get it under 3%.
That is
correct.
A lot
of people were getting, you know, and now is it at 6-7%?
It's 7.3%. So think about that.
Which you would think would be really throwing a damper on the even just the possibility of buying a new home.
In the surprising,
or established home.
That's true. But the surprising thing is it hasn't as much as people would have thought. Part of the problem is there's a shortage of housing.
Well, inventory, right.
And not only that, also apartments. So housing all around from single and multi-unit apartments, housing. But there's also parts, materials, supplies, and workers. We've talked about the employment picture from job openings to, you know, full employment and things like that. So the Fed cannot control that side of it, the supply side of it. And with the shortage of all of those things, that has an upward pressure on inflation. And so that's what the difficulty of the Fed is having right now.
That is so true, Brian. And in my opinion, the concept of the Federal Reserve continuing to raise interest rates is basically a little outdated. I mean, obviously, they don't call me up for my opinion, but I will tell you this, that, you know, you think about the things we've talked about today. First of all, inflation is a worldwide problem. And in my opinion, a lot of it is being caused because of the side effects from the COVID pandemic and the shortages that it caused and the disruption in the world economy and social system. But I would say this, think about it. We've talked about diesel prices. We've talked about grocery prices. None of those are impacted the way we want them to be by raising interest rates because diesel, for example, is a bit of a shortage. And so you raise interest rates and now oil companies say, oh, well, I guess we better raise our prices a little more to cover our expenses. And I think you raise interest rates and people don't say, well, I guess we'll consume less bread now than we used to.
Yeah.
No, those things continue along. So it's kind of a strange world in which we live, and hopefully that interest rate thing is going to come to an end pretty soon.
Okay, let's get to our final feature here, Mr. Producer.
Legacy Wealth Management presents the Stock Market Week in Review with Steve Poitras.
Thank you, Brady. The first week of November was down for the market indexes. The Dow closed at 32,403. It was down 458 points for the week. The Dow year-to-date is down nearly 11%. S&P 500 closed at 3,770, off 3.4% for the week. Year-to-date, the S&P 500 is off nearly 21%. The NASDAQ was down 627 points for the week to 10,475, a 5.7% downward hit. Year-to-date, the NASDAQ is off 33%. Oil was up $4.29 a barrel, did $92.55 for West Texas, a barrel of West Texas crude. Gold was up $37 an ounce to $1,685. Facebook took another big hit, down $9 to $90. 7.5% down for the week. Year-to-date, Facebook is off 73%.
Ouch.
Apple was took a nearly a 10% hit for the week, down to 138. Year-to-date, Apple's off 24%. Google was down 9.2% for the week to 86. Year-to-date, Google's off 40%. Microsoft was down 5.3% for the week to 221. Year-to-date, Microsoft off 33%. Amazon down 12% for the week, down to $90. Year-to-date, Amazon's off 46%. Netflix, which had been trending upward, it was actually down $35 to $260. Year-to-date, Netflix is off 56%. Tesla was down more than 11% to $207. Bitcoin was actually up 3% for the week, around $21,112, but year-to-date, it's off more than 50%. Okay, this is, I found interesting. Otter Tail took a big hit, down nearly $13 to $55.74, and trying to find out why, it had to do with the price of PVC pipe. They evidently deal a lot in that. So year-to-date, I mean, historically, Otter Tail's high at $55.74, but it was a big hit for the week. Best Buy was down 15 cents to $68.20. National average price of gas was up a little over 3 cents to $3.79. Fargo, we're at $3.45 across North Dakota. It was steady at $3.63. Minnesota was actually down nearly 2 cents to $3.61. California down 14 cents to $5.47. Cheapest gas was in Georgia, where it's down 4.2 cents to $3.13. Soybeans were up 65 cents a bushel to $14.52. Wheat up 5 cents to $9.22. We'll see how those, whether or not the shipping of grain out of the Black Sea, Ukraine, Russia, whether what happens there. So we are just about out of time, Paul. Enjoy your stay down there in Arizona. I guess you're coming back as soon as tomorrow. Is that right?
Well, I'll be back in the office on Tuesday. Hey, one last thing. You know, there's like 85% of the S&P firms have reported their earnings. Over 70% have beat their earnings right. Surprises.
We got to get out of here. For Paul and for Brian, for Josh, myself, Steve Poitras, have a great week. You've been listening to Investment Talk over 550 KFYR Bismarck, 790 KFGO Fargo, 104.7 KFGO Fargo. See you next week.
You've been listening to Investment Talk, a one-hour show heard each Sunday morning here on KFGO and featuring investment advisor Paul Myers from Legacy Wealth Management. If you have questions or concerns about your investments, you can reach Paul or his financial advisory team at the Legacy office in Fargo at 365-8083 or visit the website at legacywealthfargo.com. Securities and investment advisory services offered through LPL Financial as registered investment advisor, member FINRA and SIPC. Thanks for listening. Give us a call, and we'll look forward to being back here next Sunday on KFGO.